Well, it's a pleasure sitting in for Paul W. Smith again. And boy, is there a lot to discuss on the plate. We've got a full scheduled and a great show coming up for you today. It's 29 degrees outside, Danielle. It's freezing.
Yeah, that's too cold.
But I got to tell you, walking into the Fisher Building, I saw that beautiful Christmas tree right in the foyer. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, I love that tree.
I took a picture of it, Danielle, and I posted it on my little Facebook page.
Did you?
Yeah, so that people can see the picture. It was beautiful, majestic.
It is. Did you say that you were filling in today, or did you just post the tree?
I think I was saying that I was filling in. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Of course I tell people I'm filling in.
Let's repost that then.
Absolutely. Let people know. But there is so much going on locally as well as nationally. And Danielle, I got to tell you, I'm in the market for a new car pretty soon.
Okay. What are we thinking?
I'm American, looking for probably a Ford or a General Motors.
Okay, I got one for you.
You do? What do you have?
I think that you should get a Ford Maverick. In my personal opinion, it's a hybrid.
No.
Okay.
God bless the Ford Motor Company and all those that work at Ford Motor Company. And you know, some people like the Maverick. Maverick's a little bit too small of a. It reminds me of the old Rangers.
Yeah. My dad used to have one. That's probably why I like it, to be honest. My dad used to have one of those. And it is a smaller truck, but it's a hybrid. They get really great gas mileage.
Yeah, but I'm kind of looking for an SUV, I think.
That is an SUV, right?
Well, it's a small truck.
SUV-ish.
Well, the news, did you see the front page of the Detroit Free Press today?
I did not.
It said that buyers are staying away from auto lots. And they're saying that despite the push for some of the car makers to offer these generous incentives on Black Friday and throughout the end of the year, it may not be enough to overcome people's weariness of how much car prices have just skyrocketed. And it's not just car prices, the new car prices, but also the used car prices that the auto industry analysts are forecasting that new vehicle sales may be slowing tremendously this year and going into next year as well. So what does that say to a lot of our brothers and sisters that work for the big three here or the Detroit three here in the Detroit area?
Yeah, well, that's concerning.
It is a little concerning.
Because my partner, he works for GM. So if there's going to be slowdowns, then he's not going to have a job.
Where does he work at GM?
Well, right now he works in the Kansas City plant in GM. He's working on the Bolt. So working on electric.
Yeah.
But if they're slowing down, then he won't have a job.
Well, hopefully they're not slowing down. Hey, also, the front page of the Free Press, and normally I check out the news on the Free Press, but the Free Press had a lot of news on there, and it talked about the Flint residents are waiting their cut of, if you remember, that they received a settlement, a potential settlement of $626 million in this civil settlement for the litigation that involved the water that was poisoned, if you remember this. From a couple of years back?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the IRS is actually standing in line to collect their fair share. So Uncle Sam, like normal, is standing in line waiting to collect their fair share.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But hey, on national news, we've got a full show, like I mentioned earlier. We're going to have John Gizzi, senior White House correspondent for Newsmax, on with us a little bit later on. He's going to be talking about Somalia and Afghanistan immigrants here in the United States, as well as the CR, the continuing resolution that, you remember, the government was shut down for 45 days, right? Well, they're talking about potentially shutting it down again in late January if there isn't a meeting of the minds on health care. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Venezuela. There's a lot happening with Venezuela. And if I had a crystal ball in front of me, Danielle, I would have to say that I think we're going to have some land attacks on the cartels inside of Venezuela. We heard that President Trump actually had a conversation with President Maduro of Venezuela, the illegitimate leader of Venezuela, who declared himself the winner of the election. And
wait.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually the winner. He just declared himself.
He was actually the people were voting for the opposition party, that the United States was supporting. And he basically said that, you know, Stalin, the former leader of the Soviet Union, basically used to say it's not those who vote that make a difference. It's those who count the votes
make
the difference. Yeah. Oh. So in Venezuela, President Maduro had his people counting the votes, and he suddenly became the winner with like 98% of the vote.
No.
Yeah, he won with a resounding 98%.
I'm a cheater.
I know. If I was a cheater, I'd want 100% of the vote. I mean, why would you settle for 98% of the vote?
It's more suspicious if you get 100.
I don't think so.
I think so. There's no way you could get 100% of people voting
for
you.
Let me be your spirit guide in elections.
Okay.
If I were the leader of Venezuela, I would want to win with 100% of the vote. Kind of like what President Xi of China wins, or President Putin in Russia, if you recall. He had a resounding victory as well.
Okay.
Yep. We're also going to talk a little bit about Minnesota and what's happening in Minnesota with John Gizzi. As you know, there's a lot of fraud that, by the way, this isn't me, a resounding conservative, talking about this. This is actually the New York Times that broke the story about Governor Waltz. And this was going to be our future vice president of the United States, if you remember. Well, Governor Waltz, under his watch, it looks like the New York Times and the unions in Minnesota broke that about $1 billion or more dollars have been defrauded from the taxpayers and from programs that should be going to the needy and to children that have certain diseases. And instead, that money's been fraudulently put into big mansions and large, beautiful luxury cars, as well as an allegation that the money was also sent to a terrorist group named Al-Shabaab. Oh. And that is very close, near and dear to my heart, because when I was overseas, and one of the posts that I was stationed in was in the Horn of Africa, and right just north of Somalia, in a country that is actually called, and there is an actual country called Djibouti. And one of the terrorist threats in that area, besides Al-Qaeda, was a group out of Somalia called Al-Shabaab. So we're going to be talking with John Gizzi coming up. And after John Gizzi, we're also going to talk with Blue Cross Blue Shield on the raising healthcare costs and what we can do. Remember, today is Giving Tuesday, so give all you possibly can. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on Focus. We'll be right back. Oh, yeah. I was prepping for the show and sitting in the Paul W. Smith conference room preparing for today. And I realized that one of the topics we're going to have to discuss is this immigration crackdown. So we reached out to one of the most seasoned, respected political journalists in America, Newsmax's own John Gizzi, known for his sharp insight, deep historical knowledge, and unmatched access inside Washington. John has spent decades breaking down the stories behind the headlines. He's like our very own walking ChatGPT. Get ready for a lively, informative conversation with a true heavyweight in political reporting. John Gizzi, how are you today?
Rocky, after an introduction like that about the only thing a gentleman can do is die, I feel great.
I hope not during the program. I hope not during the program. We've got a lot to discuss. John, what's going on in Washington? There's so much, especially, let's start off with the Minnesota fraud with Governor Waltz and this $1 billion that not a conservative newspaper, but a liberal newspaper like the New York Times breaks and says that their unions are reporting that there's $1 billion of fraud in Minnesota that's been funneled to these Somali organizations.
Right. And the Somali immigrants are a big presence in Minnesota. Of course, at least one congressman is of Somali descent. But the whole idea about money illegally being used to benefit them and their organizations comes from the state and the state capital at St. Paul. The New York Times, which did an exhaustive investigative report, concluded that the man at the top, Governor Tim Walz, the 2024 vice presidential nominee with Kamala Harris is responsible. He, of course, is denying this. And one's guess would be that this is going to drag on for months now in terms of an investigation. And it all comes as Governor Walz is seeking an unprecedented third term in the state house.
Yeah,
meaning we're going to hear about this.
Yeah, but I'm sure that the Democrats, especially from this potential vice presidential, or he was the vice presidential candidate for the Democrats, I'm sure that the Democrats view him like an Uber driver with a 2-star rating. They don't want anything to do with him, I'm sure. Is that what you're hearing?
This is what I'm hearing, and Minnesota does have a history of sitting statewide office holders taking on incumbent governors in primaries in the past, going back to the 1960s. So it would not surprise him if an alternative Democrat candidate arises. This is a story I'm going to be working on, by the way, for Newsmax.
Well, we'll have to cover it then as well. Listen, let's move on to the administration's crackdown on immigration during the cabinet meeting. I know that the president was talking about immigration during the cabinet meeting and a few other things that are breaking right now because the cabinet meeting is actually taking place. And we've learned about the two National Guardsmen that were tragically shot.
Very
and,
sad.
And yes, extremely. And by someone that was actually raised from the age of 15, taken in by the CIA, vetted and trained in Afghanistan and then brought here, but yet did not speak a lick of English or really care to be in the United States. What's the president talking about regarding his administration's crackdown on immigration?
Well, the first thing is that countries in the Middle East, including Iran, Iraq, 17 other countries, plus some in Africa that are considered to have a strong terrorist presence, are simply going to be denied the right to have their residents emigrate to the U.S., whether they go through the process of immigration, the legal way, or not. And this he will do by executive order. He's almost sure to be challenged on that by Democrats in Congress, as well as some in the legal community. But the fact is that given these horrific shootings that occurred, including taking the wife of one young lady with the West Virginia National Guard, the president certainly has support for what he's doing. Now, again, we get on a slippery slope. So many in Afghanistan worked with the U.S. military as well as the CIA.
Very true.
And in turn, they were people whose lives were threatened had they stayed in Kabul. So the U.S. generally has an attitude of rewarding those who risk their lives to work with them. This doesn't mean these are all good people, however, and sometimes tragedy arises from it.
No, and I agree. And working with an interpreter myself with my team when I was in the Army overseas in the war, those are individuals that obviously are somewhat vetted, but you always still keep an eye on them, and hopefully they do the job that you're asking them to do and that they're proving themselves to want to be here and be Americans. Obviously, this individual, as well as others, were not. So let's move on to a real hot topic right now. And Chuck Schumer was on the Senate floor, and he was actually talking about President Trump getting us into a war? This is what he said.
And so, Americans are right to wonder, what on earth is Donald Trump planning in Venezuela?
So the question is, what is President Trump planning on in Venezuela? Because before I tell you, from my perspective, John, I believe we're going to take out the cartels from airstrikes and potentially destabilize Maduro, the president of Venezuela.
There have been 80 deaths so far at the hands of U.S. battleships. We certainly have seen Secretary of War Hegseth come under fire for defending the admiral in charge of the strikes killing in some cases Venezuelans. The Venezuelan Congress and its Senate president in particular have called for an investigation. However, overall, it would seem that this is a president who first and foremost wants to avoid putting fighting men and women in harm's way unless he absolutely has to. He does not want war. And it would not surprise me if these conversations with the Marxist president Maduro of Venezuela lead to him leaving that country and going into exile and permitting Maria Corchada, who was denied the right to run for president in a race she would have won, the opportunity to finally be elected in a free election.
Well, 15 seconds left. Real quickly, tell us what's going to happen with the continuing resolution that's been kicked down the road. That's the resolution that funds our government, kicked down the road till January after this 45-day, January 1st or 31st, right? Or what day? What day is the continuing resolution over?
Well, at the end of January, January 1st is the day that the premiums that Joe Biden enlarged the Affordable Care Act with are going to run out. And that was a problem that finally the Congress agreed to separate from the continuing resolution. My guess is they will resolve a market-based solution with health savings account that many cities in Michigan use for municipal employees as a means of making sure the costly premiums don't come back in the form we are at because we can't afford it.
John, thank you very much for being on. We're going to be talking about those health care premiums next with Andy Hetzel, the Vice President of Communications for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. And he'll talk to us about what we need to do to lower health care costs. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. A little bit of the Polynesian music to move us into the holiday spirit. You know, we had John Gizzi earlier, and we'll be talking a little bit more about those subjects throughout the show today. But again, it's Giving Tuesday, and what is Giving Tuesday? Giving to the charities. They're really counting us on all of us to lend a helping hand so that they can lend a helping hand up for people that are in need. So please don't forget all those charities that are out there. We're going to be talking to one in a few minutes after we finished speaking with our next guest, but it's also one of the things that we'll be talking about tonight on The Pulse with Roop Raj. I'll be on The Pulse at, on Fox 2 at 7:30, and then again, I think it replays at 11:30. But we're going to be talking about the immigration issue and what the administration is currently doing and what was discussed at today's cabinet meeting, because it's an issue that we will still be discussing throughout this show and other shows, and that is people that don't want to be there here in the United States, should they be allowed to come to the United States? But we also touched base with John about the healthcare costs and what a political hot potato those healthcare costs are. And we are truly blessed to be joined by one of Michigan's leading voices in the health community and community wellness, and it's Andy Hetzel from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. He's known for his energetic leadership and commitment to improving healthcare across the state. And Andy brings a powerful perspective to innovation, access, and what's next in healthcare. And on a personal note, I didn't realize that I knew Andy, and we were talking a little bit yesterday, and Andy and I worked in the legislature together. How are you, Andy?
I am well, Andrew. Thank you for having me on the show to represent our CEO, Tricia Keith, and all the good people at Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan. It's good to be here.
Yes, it's great to be with you as well. And Tricia Keith was also one of those people that worked with us in the House of Representatives and in Michigan's House when we were much younger. So it's we asked her to be on, but she's obviously very tied up with a very senior client. So we got the next best person, Andy, to come on board. And Andy, I got to tell you, a lot of people, one of the people that I served with, a former team sergeant of mine in the Army, called me up over the weekend. And, you know, over Thanksgiving weekend, he was starting to look at the options that he has for healthcare. He doesn't live in Michigan. He lives outside of Michigan, but he said, I was on the Affordable Care Act website, And I was paying like $1,000 for my wife and I. Where I'm retired from Kenworth Trucking, and I've still got a couple more years before Social Security kicks in. He's in his late 50s. He's a little bit older than me. And he said, I was blown away because I was just paying over $1,000 for the two of us. And now the prices that I'm seeing pop up for next year, he's talking about paying close to $3,000. It's just unbelievable. Why are we seeing such incredible cost increases in healthcare?
Well, for him, in the individual market, there's a couple reasons. One is that across the system, across the country, we're experiencing tremendous price increases and cost growth upstream in the healthcare delivery system. So it's important for your listeners to understand that the health insurance premium they pay is downstream. That is reflective of the costs that are upstream in the system. And anybody who's fished before knows that whatever flows into a river upstream ultimately ends up downstream. And so we're seeing price increases for medical care, for example. They've gone up by 40% since 2000. That's much faster, much more significant than price increases for ordinary commodities. Last year alone, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan paid 15% more for our members' drug claims than we did the year before. So that's five times faster than inflation. And when you take a look at how the health insurance dollar is spent, 47 cents of that dollar that you send your health insurance company typically goes to hospital care. You have 25 cents going to medical care outside the hospital setting, 21 cents to pay for prescription and specialty drugs. And all of those costs have grown substantially higher than inflation. And that is what is happening to the health insurance premiums that individuals like your friend are paying in the individual market, but also small employers are paying here in Michigan. And it's a national trend, but it's really impacting people here in Michigan right now. And we're very concerned about it.
So, Andy, for individuals and families like ours, what are the most effective ways that they could actually reduce that health insurance expense?
Sure. So it depends on what market they're in. So if you're covered by an employer, what you should do is make sure that that when you go into open enrollment with your employer, that you're looking at all of your options. At Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, for example, our employees have a choice between a PPO plan and an HMO plan. We also have a health savings account option that allows people to save tax-free for their healthcare expenses, especially if they're in a high-deductible healthcare plan. You can use that HSA, save tax-free, and then spend that money to pay for your deductible. So there are choices that people have. In the individual market where your friend is, in the Obamacare system or the Affordable Care Act system, here in Michigan, those folks are being impacted by a number of factors. One is that the federal refundable tax credits that help subsidize those premiums have gone down. And so if you take the tax credit down, you're increasing the weight of the premium on those consumers. And also, because of the cost increases that all insurers are seeing in the system, some carriers have decided to leave the market. Here in Michigan, Blue Cross continues to offer individual plans in all 83 counties. We've done that since the Affordable Care Act came into being, and we're proud of that, but we're the only carrier to do that. And individual market, you might not have a lot of choice when you shop.
Yeah, our hats off to that fact. What is Blue Cross Blue Shield doing to tighten up their belt internally, as well as to make sure that all these expenses are, I've read articles about Tricia Keith, the new CEO, coming in to this new market, and the fact that prices are just going through the roof because of inflation. But what are you doing as a corporation to bring back costs for individuals as well as internally as a company?
Absolutely. I mean, we're accountable for that health insurance premium dollar as well. 9 cents of that dollar goes to pay for the operations of Blue Cross Blue Shield in Michigan. And so Tricia Keith, as our CEO, has come in and she's challenged all of us. We have a very, very challenging $600 million cost reduction goal that she had set for us, and we're well on the way to achieving that. We want to retain the quality service our members depend upon, but also we want to cut back where we can on what we spend.
Well, Andy, as you know, I've been a big fan of Danny Lepp's Even though we didn't always see eye to eye, but Tricia Keith is, you've got a great CEO there. And thank you very much for bringing us up to speed on healthcare and what we can do to lower our prices. If people want more information, is there a website that they could go to?
Sure. miBlueDaily.com/affordability.
Andy Hetzel from Blue Cross Blue Shield. And again, it's Giving Tuesday, and we're going to be joined by Forgotten Harvest after these messages. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. Again, we've been talking about today, December 2nd, being Giving Tuesday. Well, did you know that more than 500,000 Metro Detroiters experience food insecurity each year? That's one in every six people who struggle to access food to keep themselves and their families healthy. And one of those organizations that's out there doing a lot is Forgotten Harvest. And Forgotten Harvest is on the road 6 days a week to distribute enough wholesome food to fill the tables of these families in need, free of charge. And they need your help to continue providing this essential relief throughout the winter, especially throughout the winter when it gets really cold and tough. This holiday season, give a gift of food to your community by donating to Forgotten Harvest. And thanks to Herald and K-Fund, every dollar you donate to Forgotten Harvest in this month, month of December, will be matched up to $50,000, meaning that your gift will provide twice as many meals to those in need. For many of us, this holiday time is a time for gathering with loved ones, passing food and stories around a table, and sharing in the warmth of the season and the cheer. Your support for Forgotten Harvest will help our neighbors experiencing that food insecurity to do the same. When families are fed, our communities can thrive. And isn't that a true statement? But this work takes all of us. Double your impact this December by visiting ForgottenHarvest.com. That's ForgottenHarvest.com. .org. It's ForgottenHarvest.org. Danielle, you didn't correct me. ForgottenHarvest.org to make your gift and give our neighbors hope in time for the holidays. And it's none better than to be joined today by a leader who's transforming the fight against hunger in our community here in Southeast Michigan. And that's none other than Adrian Lewis, the CEO of Forgotten Harvest. And under his leadership, this remarkable organization is rescuing millions of pounds of fresh food and delivering hope to families who need it the most, especially, like I said, this wintertime. Get ready for an inspiring conversation with a visionary change maker that is really making an impact. Adrian, how are you today?
Good afternoon and happy Giving Tuesday. How are you today, Rock?
I'm doing great, Adrian. Listen, my wife and I, every time we get that envelope, I wish I would have known. We would have waited till today for that match. But if we got an envelope for Forgotten Harvest and we sent it in, does it go towards any of these matches that you've got going from any of these foundations?
It depends on, well, no, the match is specifically for today. However, you know, we're still just as grateful for your donation, and please don't consider it a lost cause.
Adrian, that's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say, give another contribution. I was going to call the wife while we were on and
you
say...
You read between the lines. I'm glad you came to that conclusion.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we will, and you can count on it tonight. But listen, Adrian, you've got these two funds working on this match for Forgotten Harvest. Tell us how important supporting Forgotten Harvest in these next few months before the holidays and then in the winter months when a lot more people are focusing on their own paying off of bills and the cold weather. Is it harder for Forgotten Harvest to get more donations during the winter?
Absolutely. It does become a little bit more of a strain because the demand is there, right? However, you know, partnerships like with WJR, but more especially the match that we have going on here today with Rick Young Insurance and the Grateful Giving Foundation, being able to have $25,000 matched dollar for dollar is definitely going to help with that. We have over you know, close to 1 million individuals that are fighting food insecurity this holiday season. And we want to do all we can to bridge that gap in being able to not only make sure that our neighbors in need are fed, but they're also done so with dignity.
You know, I consider myself a fairly educated guy, but and I've heard about food insecurity a lot from organizations like yours and others, but I never understood, what does that mean as far as the poverty line? How far do you go up? Do you go up above the poverty level, or is it strictly the poverty level and below that considers a family food insecure?
It is slightly above the poverty level, because if you think about it, you know, food insecurity is one that, let me put it this way to you, Rob. Think about hunger, right? Hunger is a state. I'm hungry right now. If I'm food insecure, you can be both. But if I'm food insecure, I can be eating right now, but I'm worried about feeding my family tonight or tomorrow. And sometimes we need that hand up to get past that hurdle or past that situation. And that's what happens, you know. So we can be at the poverty line, but this can happen to any person in any area code, but more specifically, any zip code within Metro Detroit. And we're here to make sure that, you know, that help is there.
Yeah, we see it even in some of the wealthiest suburbs. You still have people that are fighting food insecurity. So how does Forgotten Harvest actually get on the road 6 days a week? I mean, we have a huge tri-county and even larger area when you count up Washtenaw, Monroe, and Livingston, the southern portion of Flint, Genesee, and Lapeer. You've got a huge area to cover. How do you manage that?
Well, if you think about our service area being Wayne, Oakland, Macomb County, that's a large square mileage, right? However, for the past 35 years, not only have our mission been able to achieve meeting that demand, but we have logistics that can be agile. We can get our trucks on the road every day, 6 days a week. And that's over about 50, a little over 50 vehicles that are on the road daily, 6 days a week. So to be able to do that and have all of that coordinated with our over 200 pantry partners to help with distributions, that takes a lot. But guess what? It's an effort that's worth doing every single day. And we're doing it well.
Amen. Adrian, you talk about rescuing millions of pounds of food. I have a friend that works with the Knights of Columbus, and at night he goes to some of the Panera Breads in Oakland County. His name is John Scott. He used to be a former Oakland County commissioner. And he collects the bread that is not sold or the pastries, and he takes them to food pantries. Is that something that Forgotten Harvest does? And in the last 30 seconds, tell us in 30 seconds, and on top of that, tell us how we can get involved today even more.
Please visit www.forgottenharvest.org and find the many ways to have your donation match today.
Well, Adrian Lewis, you are truly a shining star for a lot of us, and for what you do for the community. Our hats off to you from WJR and myself, and I'll call my wife and make sure we donate again today. God bless you, and thank you for what you're doing. And folks, don't forget, today is Giving Tuesday, December 2nd. We've got a full 1 hour of some really great guests. Daniel Hoffman, former CIA station chief from Moscow, Nate Forbes, the owner of Somerset Collection, and Dave Sowerby wrapping up next hour. So stay tuned. This is Rocky Retrokowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on The Focus Show. Well, it hasn't gotten any warmer. It's still 29 degrees outside. And every time I hear the weather, or when Rich Lazinski tells me that it's going to be even colder this weekend, I say, how much colder could it get than 29 degrees, Rich? But, it is 29 degrees. And President's still moving forward with his ninth cabinet meeting so far in the 11th month of his administration, the beginning 11th month of his administration. And just to understand where we are as far as cabinet meetings, throughout the entire Biden administration, I believe he only had 9 cabinet meetings. But, you know, Trump's first term, I think he had 9 cabinet meetings as well. But so far in the 11 months, This is his ninth cabinet meeting, and they're still talking. And they're talking about a lot of issues that we need to be aware of. Also, today's a very special day. And for those that live in Nashville, Tennessee, or the Nashville, Tennessee area, you've got a special election to fill Mark Green, a position that Congressman Mark Green, an Army vet that I knew, basically resigned from Congress. And you've got the special election that pits a gentleman named Van Epps, a former Army captain, against a community organizer, Affan Byrne. And that is a district that has always been known to be solid, solid red. And the Dems are playing hard in that district. And what is that telling us? And what is that foreshadowing for the midterms in 2026? There's a lot to uncover there also. But, you know, we talk about things that are happening in the world. Something that really caught my eye that I wanted to share with you today is this, what's happening in England. And I'm not sure if you've seen this, Danielle, but in England, there's a lot of, how shall we say, government overreach on them reviewing your Facebook, your social media posts, and your comments in the public. Did you know about this?
I'm assuming. I thought everyone just did that. I didn't.
Well, this is the government looking at it. And we have a little clip here that talked about an arrest in England of a mother and her daughter who actually put something on social media. And then the police showed up at her door because of her opinion. They arrested them. And this is how it goes.
Okay, what was it?
Sorry, I don't like the camera. You can have my body cam. I can exhibit that to you. I just don't like the camera, really.
Okay, well, I'm doing this because this is my own house and I am telling you why I'm doing it. So I just need to know why would she's basically viewed a post, which is not an arrestable offence.
Okay. This happened in May and the only thing is we need to seize the phone at this current moment.
So you've got police officers in England coming into a house from an event that took place in May, a post that took place in May, and they want to see the child's and the mother's cell phones and their computer records, and they want to seize them so that they can review them, and if the post is theirs, they would arrest these people.
What?
Yeah. Where's the freedom of speech?
I don't understand.
Yeah, well, if you put out anything that is offensive in England to another, it is considered to be speech that potentially may be arrested or may be prosecuted. Can you believe that?
I don't think I can wrap my head around that, because on their television, they're allowed to show, like, very graphic things on TV. So why are they allowed to show that stuff, but the people can't say what they want? That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And a lot of things that are happening in England right now does not make sense. And what also doesn't make sense is the fact we talked with John Gizzi in the first hour about Governor Waltz, the governor of Minnesota, losing $1 billion to fraud to some of these Somali groups. And this was the clip that we played earlier. I wanted to share it again real quickly here.
Dozens of people of East African descent have been charged, convicted, and sentenced for stealing more than $1 billion in taxpayer money from government programs during COVID. Do you take responsibility for failing to stop this fraud in your state?
Well, certainly I take responsibility for putting people in jail. Governors don't get to just talk theoretically. We have to solve problems. Minnesota is a generous state. Minnesota is a prosperous state, a well-run state. We're AAA bond rated, but that attracts criminals. Those people are going to jail. We're doing everything we can.
That is such a non-answer answer, wouldn't you say?
It's a very politician answer.
Well, listen, as a recovering politician, I wouldn't even say that that's a politician answer. I would say that that's a very I don't know. It's like the Army two-step, which what was it? Deny everything, admit to nothing, deny everything, and whenever possible, make counter accusations.
Oh God!
Yeah, that's basically what he's doing, and this is blowing up on him like a Hezbollah pager. You know, it is popping up left and right. And I got to tell you that Governor Waltz is in deep trouble, especially if he turned a blind eye, because now Again, this is not conservative media that's talking about this. This is his own liberal media, the New York Times and the Washington Post, that are now saying that he turned a blind eye, and many in his cabinet turned a blind eye to this fraud, because they were threatened, and they were warned and threatened by some of these Somali groups that they would withhold election support. It's amazing what could happen when you withhold support to a politician, eh?
Honestly.
And then we also talked about President Trump and Chuck Schumer, and what President Trump is going to do next in Venezuela. And I made a prediction, but this is what Chuck Schumer said on the Senate floor.
And so Americans are right to wonder, what on earth is Donald Trump planning in Venezuela?
Well, I can tell you what he's planning, Senator. He's planning to attack those cartels that are making drugs and fentanyl and bringing in from China into Venezuela instead of Colombia now. And Venezuela has become the hotbed of drug production. And this is why we need to deal with this. The fentanyl that has been coming across those borders, north as well as south, that have been killing our young people, must stop. And for the first time, no matter how you feel about President Trump, let me just share with you that this is a president that for the first time has taken the war on drugs directly to the cartels. And he's made them a terrorist organization. And therefore, that war is a kinetic war, and we can use our military to destroy their assets. That's what we're really going to have to do. We're going to have to use our intelligence and our military assets. So, talking about intelligence, our next guest will be Daniel Hoffman. He was the former CIA station chief in Moscow, and he's going to talk to us if we can. Basically, we're going to talk about, can we truly trust Russia in these negotiations with Ukraine? You're listening to Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. Yeah, I didn't have single digits, the weather dropping down to single digits on my bingo card this early in December, but oh well, I didn't have this much snow either. Well, we're honored to welcome a great man and one of America's most seasoned intelligence experts. And if you've watched Fox News lately, you'll know who this is. It's Dan Hoffman, the former CIA station chief in Moscow, and with decades of frontline experience within espionage, geopolitics, and national security, Dan brings an unparalleled insight into how the world really works behind the scenes. And so get ready for a little bit of a fascinating discussion with a true insider. Dan, welcome to the Focus Show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me on the program. It's an honor.
Oh, it's my honor to be with you again. And Dan, I got to ask you, with all the discussions of Steve Witkoff back and forth between Russia and Ukraine, and this news recently that came out of a conversation of Witkoff basically prepping a Russian official on how Putin should talk to Trump so that Trump can hear his position, do you think that this has potentially weakened Steve Witkoff in the in as far as an envoy towards Ukraine, like it weakened Kellogg when Kellogg was so much in favor of Ukraine? It seems like Witkoff is so much in favor of Moscow's position.
Yeah, I think, to be honest, it was a bit naive on the part of Special Envoy Witkoff. And I say this just based on my decades at CIA of trying to see the world through the twisted KGB eyes of Vladimir Putin. Steve Witkoff was not telling the Russians anything they didn't already know about President Donald Trump. They've got a full dossier on him. They collect lots of intelligence on key senior officials in the administration, especially the president. They want to know everything they can about him. They deliberately sent Kirill Dmitriev, the head of their foreign investment fund, out to be the front line of negotiations because they want to establish some rapport, one businessman to another. But really, the larger issue here is that Vladimir Putin is just using negotiations as subterfuge. He wants to carry on the war, this brutal war where Russia spilled so much blood and treasure, because he hasn't achieved his strategic objective of overthrowing the democratically elected government of Ukraine. It's good on the Trump administration to try to bring peace, but from my experience at least, wars end when both sides are too exhausted to fight or when one side has won and neither one of those scenarios is valid. So we're trying to impose a peace, and I just don't think Russia has paid enough of a price, even by, unbelievably, by Putin's standards. He's got a high threshold for the pain he's causing his countrymen to suffer.
My God, I completely agree with you. And I remember back on February 5th, 2022, when General Milley, at that time the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was talking to Congress, and he said that Kyiv could fall, the capital of Ukraine could fall within 72 hours if Russia invaded Ukraine. And now we're going into 4 years of a brutal trench-like warfare. So I if you could just tell our listeners, as a station chief, would you be, or would the current station chief or the CIA also be responsible for bringing Witkoff up to speed? Would you be giving him information what to watch out for and what not to say before he did?
I hope so. I can tell you in my experience that some senior officials were more amenable to hearing an intelligence briefing from a CIA station chief than others. And I could also tell you that, look, I have a long history of telling the director of CIA, the White House, the Senate and the House, what they need to know, especially when it's not what they want to hear. I have too much respect for the president of the United States not to tell him what the intelligence says, even if it might conflict with his predisposed views of Russia. Now, I don't know whether Stephen Witkoff is receiving those briefings. I don't know if he's in agreement with those briefings or not, but they would be incredibly useful to him. But I will tell you, I lived through the reset, the Obama administration's reset, when Russia still had troops on the ground in Georgia. They just launched a massive cyber attack on Estonia. And I was asked by the White House and by the ambassador in Moscow about reset. I said, look, the CIA doesn't do policy. I'm just telling you, based on intelligence, that this isn't going anywhere. And it did collapse under its own weight. And that's just part of the nature of doing business with Vladimir Putin's Russia, unfortunately.
I, again, couldn't disagree with you at all. 4 days ago, Russian President Vladimir Putin threatened to take more land from Ukraine in his war, and he boasts a lot. But what should we take from Envoy Stephen Witkoff's meeting in Russia today? Is there something we should be watching out for specifically, especially on the heels of that leaked phone conversation that we were talking about?
So what Vladimir Putin wants to do is influence, not inform. So he's welcoming Representative Witkoff to the Kremlin. There'll be a lot of pomp and circumstance. And what he'll do is lie and obfuscate. He'll say, we're winning in Ukraine. Ukrainians can't win this war. Really, Russia's taken very little territory and has lost, you know, a million casualties. But okay, Putin will put his spin on it. He doesn't expect a negotiated deal. What he wants is for Ukraine to give up fortified areas in Donetsk so that maybe a year from now, if there is a ceasefire, that Russia can launch another invasion. Vladimir Putin has never adhered to any agreement he's ever signed or his predecessors ever signed. It's just the way that he operates. And so he'll run with maximalist demands and throw a whole lot of lies and propaganda at Representative Witkoff. We talked about a pre-brief. It's the post-Kremlin meeting that would be of great value. It would be good if Witkoff had somebody with him in the meeting, maybe from the embassy, but he hasn't been doing that. But somebody who could talk to him about what he heard and then set the record straight with the facts as we know them. Because I'll trust Jack Keane's Institute for the Study of War. If folks want to know what's really going on, read the analysis from General Keane's ISW reports. They're extraordinarily well sourced. The analysis is first rate.
I'm a big fan of General Keane and actually read those on my own free time, and have been a strong supporter of General Kellogg as well.
Yes.
What do you take of the fact that General Kellogg, who is a dear friend of mine, is stepping down now effective January? Does that, if this war keeps prolonging on, does that, number one, weaken Ukraine's voice in Washington? And secondly, is Putin playing the long game, hoping that the midterms will be favorable to the Democrats and therefore create more disharmony in the United States?
Yeah, well, Putin has a lot of goals that he is pursuing simultaneously. So one is to overthrow the government of Ukraine and subjugate its people. The yeah. second one is to exert primacy in his own self-designated sphere of influence. He wants to run the show in that part of the world, in the former Soviet Union. He's not going to let NATO or the United States interfere in his global, his designs in that part of the world. And the third thing is he wants to make it appear like he can go toe-to-toe with the United States and not allow us to project power. There's no way he's going to allow President Trump to secure a peace deal.
But is he hoping for the Democrats to win so that there's a third potential, presidential or an issue in D.C.?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm getting at.
Sure. I mean, he hates Democrats and he hates Republicans. And what he does like is
he hates Americans.
The United States. He'll make whatever happens politically in this country. He'll try to use that further to divide our citizens from one another. That's what he's going to try to do. And what we could do as citizens is, hey, remove the scales from your eyes, folks. Read a little bit about the KGB. That's where Vladimir Putin comes from. And understand that he's a ruthless dictator. If you want to split Russia from China, you can do it, but only after Putin is gone. I'm putting out an article, a column in the Washington Times in about a week or so about how China is essentially fighting a proxy war against the United States and our allies
by
using Russia as a blunt instrument. So we need to stop it.
Completely agree. Daniel Hoffman, former station chief, CIA station chief in Moscow. Great insight. We're next, switching gears, going to be talking Nate Forbes, the owner of Somerset Collection, before the holidays. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on Focus. Not the holiday music I was actually looking forward to, but that's all right, Danielle. That's all right. Hey, I am thrilled to welcome one of Michigan's most visionary developers, Nate Forbes. He's the driving force behind the iconic Somerset Collection of Troy and many other beautiful developments in our sister peninsula known as Florida. Nate is known for blending world-class design with unforgettable shopping and dining experiences, and he's helped shape one of the region's premier destinations, Somerset Mall. Or the Somerset Collection. If you haven't shopped at Forbes Development, then get ready for an inspiring look at innovation, community, and the future of retail. With the holidays upon us, we thought we'd check in with Somerset's own Nate Forbes. And Nate, you're there with us, right?
Rocky, I am here.
Excellent. Excellent.
I am here. And you picked up on it. We don't call it a mall. It's a collection.
That is true. It is a collection. And it's a collection of some of the finest. You really blend a great connection between some really high-profile stores with some smaller stores, and it's really an experience to walk through both the south side as well as the north side with that tunnel that bridge that binds both.
Yeah, you know, Rocky, it's been really a labor of love, and what we really try to do as a strategy is have the best-in-class retail leasing strategy in all categories. So whether you're footwear or ready-to-wear for women's or men's or children, interesting other items, home goods, home accessories, jewelry, body care, we have 45% of our stores are their only stores in the state of Michigan. So we really try to get the most current, most unique, most desirable retailers as part of our 165 collection of shops here at Somerset. And it's an ongoing, you know, never-ending battle to do that and be one-of-a-kind, first-to-market type of shopping environment.
Well, you've done an outstanding job. And as one of your cheerleaders, I've been watching what you were going through with in the city of Troy with that development in Somerset West. And can you kind of bring us up to speed on that development, the old Kmart development?
Yeah, well, if you haven't been by there recently, obviously the old Kmart World Headquarters, which was close to 1 million square feet, is completely gone. We've done all the underground site work. We have the road network in, at least up to the finished course. University of Michigan will be the first phase of that project. We'll be close to 300,000 square feet of a new University of Michigan specialty care medical facility. The steel is out of the ground. Part of the development is up to the third floor, and they're continuing to erect steel and do all the infrastructure to have that thing ready for a June of 2027 opening.
What about other, are you going to have other stores or condominiums, apartments? What are you going to have there besides that?
So we're going to have a big medical presence. We're going to have residential offerings as well and food and beverage offerings. And then a little bit of office space that'll be part of a mixed use kind of design and component. So we'll have a little bit of everything that'll kind of work off of each other. It'll all be centered around an acre and a half central gathering space, or a park, if you will, that will be open to the public for the entire community to enjoy. So that is in different phases of development, and we're working towards building out this whole development here within the next, 2 to 5 years.
Well, you know what? I guess I should say this because I've got a little bit of some hidden desire for your developments throughout that region, because I live just two blocks east of Somerset, north of Big Beaver. In that area, my wife and I bought an acre out there, and we built our house. And what you're developing between Somerset North, Somerset South, as well as in that region, we're super excited about. It's looking beautiful.
Yes, thank you.
Well, listen, with the holiday season upon us, what's going on at Somerset Mall, or Somerset Collection, excuse me, that you can tell us that we should be looking forward to, and the shopping hours? What should we be kind of focusing on? Are there any special events going on there?
Yeah, I'll tell you, we had our, Christmas decorations went up. They go up right after Halloween, and then we do our Santa arrival through the Skywalk and before Thanksgiving. We have all of our decor up now, our three-story castles up. We go to holiday hours between now and the end of the year. You need to check the website to find out the latest holiday hours. But I got to tell you, though, Black Friday was the busiest Friday after Thanksgiving that I have seen in the 20-some years, or 30 years now, 35 years since we opened the Somerset Collection.
Well, that's actually great to hear. Let me ask you, we've got 45 seconds. What changes in consumer behavior have really surprised you the most in the last few years? And has it changed?
It has. I think the younger generation is coming back to brick and mortar in droves. And we're seeing a lot of the 18 to 35-year-old shopper coming back. They enjoy the socialization. They enjoy what I call the three Fs: fit, feel, and fabrication, of actually being able to touch and try on the product. And they love to get the latest the designs that hit the stores, whether it's from Aloe Yoga or Lululemon or Aritzia. I mean, they like to be in the know. They like to socialize. They like to be with their friends. They like to be out and be seen. They like to use their social media as inspiration. They follow all these different social media sites and what's new and what's hot. And they want the latest store drops at a moment's notice. And you can only get that by really touching and feeling it at physical brick-and-mortar stores.
Oh, that's great to hear. Nate Forbes, the owner of Somerset Collection, thanks for being on Paul W. Smith's Focus Show on WJR. We're next going to be joined by David Sowerby, the Ancora Advisors Managing Partner, who's going to be talking to us about holiday spending and what we should be watching out for and what we should be watching for, as well as the economy. This is Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for Paul W. Smith on WJR. Oh, if you only would have seen my face. I was like, what is that? And then I hear Fred Bear, and I'm suddenly have a smile on my face. Thank you, Danielle. Thank you for soothing the inner spirit inside my heart. Thank you this holiday season. We had Nate Forbes, the owner of the Somerset Collection, on with us, and he told us about all the special things that are happening around the Somerset Collection, as well as the stores and the hours between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. today, if you're interested in buying something out there. So we thought we'd reach out and get one of Michigan's most respected economic voices to give us a little bit of reason in our spending. And that's Dave Sowerby from Ancora Advisors. With his sharp market insight, clear-eyed analysis, and decades of investment experience, Dave has a remarkable ability to make sense out of what's happening in the economy and what it means to all of us, especially in this holiday season. And Dave, I couldn't be happier to have you on and to close the show with you. So tell us, what's going on with the economy and what should we really be doing this holiday season?
Rocky, what a very generous intro.
Thank you.
thank you. Very, very generous. Let's say here we are December 2nd. Expectations are holiday spending will be about a B letter grade. It's probably going to be up between 4% and 5% compared to year ago levels. Black Friday was a pretty good kickoff. Expectations were low, guarded, but sales were up 5% or better, in some cases closer to 10%. And we know the consumer is, as always, going to be very value-oriented, who's got sales, who's giving me the best deal. But at the end of the day, when I look at the critical variables, I see about a 4 to 5% increase in holiday spending.
That's pretty generous, actually. And so what indicators are you watching most closely as we head into this holiday season?
Well, let's not get too much in the weeds, but here are some critical ones. The job market is still positive. Michigan's unemployment rate is 5%, a little bit above the national average, but still low by historical standards. That's a plus sign. Income growth is up about 5% compared to year ago levels. That correlates to the 5% increase in spending anticipated. Stock market is up 10% or better this year. That helps the wealth effect and plays into spending patterns. Maybe the only yellow flag would be consumer sentiment from the University of Michigan is lower than it was in Christmas holiday 2024. That maybe keeps a guardrail on spending. And I'll add this. We think about the malls, whether it's buying a sweater or a hard good, but it extends to service spending. If I buy my son a gym membership next year because he likes to go to the gym and it's a good gift, that's a service expenditure. So we just don't need to limit it to the malls and retail. There's going to be gifts given out this year, which could be a airline ticket to Florida or a gym membership, and the list goes on.
Well, you talk about consumer sentiment. And is it down because of this political buzzword of affordability? Because, listen, I see things that are just astronomically expensive as well. And I complain to my wife all the time about how much, you know, things have really gone up in price. But I guess, is that why the consumer sentiment is down?
It's down for that reason, yes. Affordability. Inflation is still growing. It's not growing as fast as it was 3 or 4 years ago, but prices are still, in the last 4 years, 5 years, up 25% cumulatively. That eats into purchasing power. Throw in some of the uncertainty in government, tariffs, the list can go on and on. But at the end of the day, I've learned in my career, consumers are pretty good at managing their household balance sheets and never underestimate the health of the U.S. consumer to be sensible, spend wisely. And that's where I think we'll be up 4 to 5% this holiday season.
From your words to God's ears, I hope that's very true. I guess, what are you seeing in Michigan's economy specifically, and anything unique compared to the nation's picture going forward into 2026 that you can kind of prognosticate on today?
Generally favorable. If I look at a simple measure I call prosperity, job growth plus income growth, Michigan is still keeping pretty good pace with the U.S. Not quite equal, but pretty good pace. The state business climate still more competitive than it was over 10 years ago. Manufacturing renaissance, they're just simply more productive, better companies. The auto companies are better capital allocators in the interest of the shareholder. GM and Ford, good sales increase this year, market share gains. Pound for pound, Michigan's doing pretty well. We'd love to solve the population issue here. That's a bigger one. But as I look at Michigan, it's in a good competitive perspective.
Well, thank you very much. Dave Sowerby, you can find him as the managing partner of Ancora Advisors, and he's truly one of Michigan's most respected economic voices. David, thank you for being on with us, and happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you and your family. And for those that are listening, I wanted to also remind you about four things. One is Fred Durhall Jr. I served with Fred Durhall. He leaves a legacy of service, compassion, and leadership, a true leader in the Detroit area, and his son. Our heart goes out to his son and the Durhall family, Fred Durhall III. And also, tonight, I'll be on The Pulse at 7:30 with Roop Rausch at Channel 2 at Fox 2 Detroit. And again, it'll replay, I think, at 11:30. And then watch the Tennessee elections. I think the Republicans will pull it off. But if we don't, 2026 is looking pretty dim. And lastly, it's Giving Tuesday. Don't forget those organizations that are out there that need our help to help the needy. God bless you. This has been Rocky Rutschkowski sitting in for the legendary Paul W. Smith on Focus.